Ron and Anian.
It came in with a battery light on and a fresh battery. And, you know, you wonder, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Oh, my God, Ian!
The Car Doctor.
Carfax cars only show up when the car is serviced at a dealer.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now...
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Let's get together under the hood and talk about your car and its problem. More information at cardoctorshow.com, podcasting at TuneIn, iHeart, iTunes, all the great and usual places that you find podcasting today. Also, we've put ourselves up on a different podcast site, did we not, Mr. Ray? Do you recall the name of that off the top of your head?
You know, unfortunately, I don't. It starts with an S. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, not Spotify.
No.
Spect. Something.
I'll look it up. I can't remember because. But anyway, it's yet another way for people to get us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They have an app for your smartphone.
Right, and that's why we did that because we thought we would make it easy to try and condense everything. And so we'll get you that answer.
Spreaker.
What is it?
Spreaker.
Right? Spreaker.
Spreaker. Yes.
Spell that.
S P R E A or E E.
So like yeah. Speaker with an R.
S P R E A K E R.
S P R E A K E R. Spreaker.
Just like the speaker in your car, except you're right.
With an R. How about speaker with an R? It stands for Ron and Anian.
I like that.
You like that?
I like that. See, they were made for you.
Yeah, perfect. We sold that. But anyway, so that's what we're doing for podcasting. You can get us there. We've got a couple of things going on this hour and next. There's 2 hours of the Car Doctor ahead today. This is the first hour of our usual get-together here on Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time as we go out on the network. And depending upon when you're taking the show or when your affiliate takes the show, we come up and pop up at different times along the course of the weekend and I guess the week because of obviously podcasting. A little bit of trivia before we start and go to our first conversation that we're going to have. I'll ask you the question now. No cheating and using Google. All right. Let's see how smart everybody is
You're
today.
You're no fun.
Well, no using Google today. All right. In 1907, so Tom, this was when you went to high school.
Exactly.
In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent for what device? I'll leave it there. We'll come back and talk about it after we have this conversation.
But I do have a question.
Yeah.
Is it car related?
It's car related.
Okay.
In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent. I'll even give you the patent number. Maybe that'll help you. U.S. patent number 912831 for what device? All right. Let's see how you can do it. I'll tell you what. Let's see if anybody out in the audience, but no using Google. First caller that calls in, I get a Car Doctor t-shirt. All right, we'll do it that way. I can't guarantee you the size, but we'll guarantee you a Car Doctor t-shirt. How's that? All right.
That works.
Our first conversation this hour is, well, we've had Shirley on the show before, and we're glad she's taking some time today. We always enjoy talking to her. She is, she's going to tell you all about herself. I think we're going to leave it there. Let's welcome Shirley back to the show.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
Welcome back. Shirley, are you there? Welcome back to the Car Doctor. You are the proverbial little old lady from Pasadena, are you not? Tell everybody who you are and what you've done.
Well, my name's Shirley Vane. I live in Boise, Idaho, and I have raced our 2000 Corvette a couple of times for charity here. Not last year, but the year before, my top speed was 171.4. And last year I was a rider rather than a driver, and we were in a 2016 Z06, and we did 210.1,
with
second fastest car in the road rally.
Shirley, you know, you're how old are you? Can I ask you that question?
The 17th of July, I'll be 84.
So you haven't gotten this out of your system yet. You've been doing this for a little while.
Yeah. It's fun. Going fast is fun.
Yeah. Is that the fastest you've ever been, the 210 miles an hour?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
You know, are you ever going to drive again, do you think?
Not race.
Not race.
I can't race anymore. I still can drive. In fact, I picked up my new driver's license just a couple of days ago. But, no, the doctors don't think that's too smart an idea, racing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I give you a lot of credit. At any age, to get in a car knowing you're going to do 180 to 210, 220, I mean, my gosh, that's fast. You know, that's faster than I've ever been. I've done 143 in a Triumph GT 6 Plus. We don't want to tell you where, but I wasn't the driver. I was the passenger. You know, 200 miles an hour is something to see.
It was fun, but it was over with so fast that it's like almost a blur.
Yeah.
But what? You know, you go 2.5 miles, and it was fun, and it was the fastest. We were beat out by a Bugatti who did 230.6.
Well, shame on him for showing off 230
yeah.
miles an hour.
That's those fancy cars. There
yeah.
they go.
I take black out, and I'll, you know, 55 Chevy, and you know what? Those cars weren't meant to go more than 100 miles an hour. You get up to about 85, 90, and you're starting to, it's just all over the place, and the steering is crazy, and you're just like, oh, boy, hang on. And I wonder how some of these hot rods, they go down the track at 150, 160 miles an hour, and I'm just thinking, how do they do it? It's just got to be sheer guts. You know, I say it all the time. I was young and dumb. I won't do it anymore. It's changed. What got you into all this, Shirley? At what age did you start racing? Because you used to take part in the Sun Valley Road Rally in Idaho all the time, right?
Yes, it's a charity event that actually it's coming up July the 21st, 22nd again this year. And so they close off roads and there's no speed limit. You go as fast as your car will go. And one car at a time. It's not a, you know, a major race type
right.
thing like that.
Right.
It's just for speed. And anyway, it's they have a charity, the Drug Coalition, down there to help kids stay off of drugs or to help kids that have gotten on them. And that's one of their ways of raising money. And it's fun. And people come from all over. Washington, Oregon, different places to bring their cars and race them just so they can see how fast their car will go.
Run what you brung. When did you start, Shirley? I mean, you know, what did you do? You know, what did you do in your career? What did you do for working? And then, you know, one day you just decided you were going to start driving a car and going fast, or has this been something you've been doing since you were 18 years old?
Actually, that's kind of funny. There was a place in my town where the kids could line up, kind of, and you had about a half mile that we could just, you know, put your foot down and race. You know, how you kind of rev your motors
right.
a little bit
sure.
and then
yeah.
pick up a race and you'd go for a couple of 3 blocks and that was it. I mean, it wasn't legal, but it was a place we could do it.
Right. And listen, there's a lot of things we do that aren't necessarily legal, but they're fun. You know, it's and I don't support street racing, but every once in a while you do kind of. You know, it's not like I've broken a lot of laws, but I've fractured a few in my lifetime. I'll put it to you that way. Let me ask you this on a different subject, sort of the same but a different subject. So, you know, here you are at this point in the game. You've done a couple of Sun Valley Road Rallies. You're obviously into going fast. You're into racing. What do you think about electric cars? You know, do you think that 50 years from now we'll be seeing Sun Valley Road Rally drive your electric car as fast as it can go? And what would that sound like, right? Because they don't make any sound. It'll sound like this.
Yeah.
And then the race is over.
It would be boring.
Right. There's no fun in that, right? There's something, I mean, I'll ask you the question this way. You can still hear the roar of the exhaust from that car you went 210 miles an hour in, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I can hear the roar of the exhaust in my own vet.
Right.
It's pretty loud. We have to be kind of careful of putting our foot down around town because it is quite loud.
Right.
So you want to creep through the city, you know.
is it the roar you think of the exhaust? Is it the feel? Is it the smell? Is it, you know, the wind through your hair? Or is it just the whole package? And, you know, I think I know the answer, and it's just electric cars will never give us that.
Yeah, it's the whole package.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of that. And it's just, I don't know, it's just great to be out there and to be able to do it legally. That's the good thing about it.
Right. Did you ever do any, you know, you didn't buy a 63 Dodge back in the day and go street racing, did you by chance?
No, didn't do any of that. No.
So when did the Sun Valley Road Rally come up in your life? Later in life?
It came up. No, it only came up in my life. Four years ago. It was a charity event, and we had been to it, and we had watched other people do it and everything, and they were saying, well, you know, we need to get some women out here and let's get them signed up. And so I decided the next year that's what I was going to do, and that was 4 years ago, I guess. And my first run was 166, I believe, something like that. So that was pretty exciting. And
Shirley, you were 79 years old and went out and did a road rally.
Yes.
God bless you. Look at that.
I was 82 the last time I did it. So, you know, I mean, but it's just fun to be able to do that sometimes and to be able to do it, as I said, legally and to do it for charity.
Now, are you going to go back to driving your car normally, you know, back and forth to the store for groceries and, you know, church and so forth? Or?
Oh, yeah. We use the car all the time. We have it garaged from November until May, because, you know, we have snow and all that stuff. So
right.
The Corvette stays in the garage.
Right.
But from May until November, it's on the road. Oh, yeah.
Now, that Z06 Corvette that you did the 210 miles an hour in, was that modified or was that a production car off the showroom floor?
You know, I don't. There may have been some work done to that one.
Right.
My friend Brent Rule, who always rode with me, he drove, and he's a mechanic. He owns Restoration Rods, and he, I think he had done some work on that car.
Right.
But it was like a brand new car.
Right. Yeah.
You know, 2016.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So.
And, it was kind of cool. It's just that it was so fast and over with so quick that you're going, what happened?
Right, and you want to do it again. Shirley, the clock's going to take me. It's always fun talking to you, sweetheart, and I hope we get to do it again next year. Is there a website if the listeners want more information, or if somebody's out in Idaho, they want to find out how they can enter the Sun Valley Road Rally and help support the cause?
Well, I have, website, www.sunvalleyroadrally.com.
Okay. All right.
And as I say, it's coming up July 21st, 22nd, and it's for charity. And anybody that wants to do it, call and see if you can get in, because the spaces go pretty quick.
Yeah, I bet they do. Shirley Vanney, always a pleasure talking to you, and you take good care, and God bless, sweetheart.
Hey, Ron, thanks for the call.
You're very welcome. 855-560-9900. When we come back, we actually think we have somebody who claims they know the answer to the question. Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent in 1907 for what device? We'll see how smart Al is down in Brandywine, Maryland, when the Car Doctor returns right after this.
Yeah.
back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. Boy, Shirley Vaney sure can't drive 55, right? 84 years old, doing 210 miles an hour. And for those of you just returning and maybe caught half of that interview or half of that conversation, she was talking about the Sun Valley Road Rally out in Idaho. She raced in that 4 years ago, did 171 miles an hour in a Corvette that she had prepared just for her at the age of 79, almost 80 years old. Like, wow, right? Sure makes you think about, you know, it's Saturday night and I'm tired. I don't want to go out and just going to sit around and watch TV. And some people out there living life, God bless them. I wish I had the energy she has, but you know, what can I tell you? I'm sorry. Let's see. Al Brandywine, Maryland, thinks he's got the answer to today's trivia question. In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. patent number 912831, for what device? Al Brandywine, Maryland, what say you, sir? Welcome to the Car Doctor.
Thanks, Ron. Enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate what you're doing for the automotive public.
So.
My thought was it was the electric starter, and I say that because, and I swear I didn't look this up, but I remember in reading about the history of automobiles, I was surprised at how early in the automotive history the electric starter was invented. And I think windshield wipers came not too far behind. But when you think about it, you know, the old notion of having to stick a crank in the front pulley and turn the engine by hand, you know, that's a real pain in the neck. And if you're an older guy or a woman, you don't have the strength to do it, or it's winter time and the thing doesn't want to turn over easily, you know, if you go to expand the market, you better make it easy to start. So my thought was that it was the electric starter.
No. It actually was not, and I won't tell you what it was because maybe we'll get an answer later on this hour, but I will tell you this. The electric starter has a story unto itself. I don't remember the exact
okay.
I don't remember the but I appreciate I really appreciate the effort, Al. I really do. The electric starter came about because if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Charles Kettering was the gentleman's name. His buddy went to hand crank a car. This was in the mid-20s. I think is the way the story went. And his buddy went to crank a car, broke his arm. He went into the hospital. He got an infection, and he died as a result. Mm. And he said, you know, there's got to be a better way to start an automobile. And that gentleman ended up, I think he was the C in the AC, AC Delco, which was Dayton Engineering Laboratories Corporation or some such thing. And they created the electric starter. And the first car, to my knowledge, electric starters went in was Cadillac, if I'm not mistaken.
That could be. I thought it was earlier. I was surprised at how early it was. But I'm sure you're right.
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% on that. But, you know, it's that's the story that strikes in my head and comes to mind. So, Al, I got to go. The clock's going to take me. I tell you what, stay where you are, Al. We'll come back and address your comments after we take this pause for the cause. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls. We're back right after this. Ron Ananian. That's right, Ron Ananian. Hey, the Car Doctor's in-house, 855-560-9900. Let's get back with Al real quick. Brandywine, Maryland. Al, you get two for a nickel today. You were going to make an additional comment at the end there.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, a lot of my automotive knowledge, not only in terms of, you know, repairs and, you know, how things work and history, came from, I'm sure you'll remember these, the Ordell's automotive guides. And we're probably both old enough to remember those things. There were a whole series of them, one on electricals and one on,
sure,
you know,
a million years ago.
So
yeah,
forth.
Yeah.
Ages and ages ago, little black book, soft cover,
yep.
And kids grew up learning about cars, and it had some of the history of the automobile industry in there, too. I'm sure they are long since out of print, and the stuff in there is ages old, but they were a great source of information. I think there's a generation of kids that grew up learning something about cars and automotive history from those Ordell's automotive guides. Today's kids wouldn't know what the heck you're talking about, and I don't think there's anything the equivalent to that. I doubt kids go online looking for that kind of stuff. But I imagine, you know, every kid who grew up with a father who did anything on cars probably had a few of those Ordell's automotive guides in the garage.
Well, and, you know, the other issue that I see going forward when you talk about reference material, you know, if you walked in the front door of the shop, the front wall when you walk in the waiting room is just, it's a wall of books. And it's all my older stuff. It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing for a car newer than 1991. All right, but it's all the older stuff going back. And you know, there's sporadic gathering of 1950s and 60s cars, but then solids. You know, late 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s, that kind of thing. Those books are just, they're obsolete. What am I going to do with them now? You know, you can't even give them away. Nobody, you know, those cars are gone. Yeah. They're piles of rust in some salvage yard somewhere. And, you know, you look at all this automotive information, good, solid, practical, the way it was written, the way it explained things, how a charging system worked, how, you know, fundamental things that still applied. Yeah. I still have my Goodhart Wilcox Automotive Encyclopedia from 1966. Which I actually stole from my brother, but he'll never know. He doesn't listen to the show. you know, he still doesn't know what happened to it from 1973. And you know, still good, solid information.
That's just,
and you know, what do you? Libraries don't even want books anymore. 20 years from now, everything's going to be on a CD, and then I'm a page flipper. I like to flip pages. I get it. I agree with you.
Same here.
Yeah, 100%.
I go through my Ordell's. I still have one of those small books, and it's fascinating just to look at it. And it's still, I mean, physics is physics. The laws of physics haven't changed, you know?
Yep.
And the basic stuff on how an electrical system worked and what a battery is, and by talking about it on a simple car, you understand the basic concepts. And you don't dive in with, multi-port fuel injection and try to figure it out from there.
Well, and how many kids today look at, you know, they'll see a carburetor and they'll be, wow, what's that? And I don't, you know, I hate to say these things because I don't want to pick on the younger generation. The younger generation, there are some very smart mechanics amongst them.
Right.
Some of these kids with these tuner cars are absolutely amazing. It's astounding what kind of power they're getting out of little four cylinders that weigh a third of what these big block muscle cars everybody loves to drive and hang out in. The only thing I just think you look a lot cooler with your elbow out the window of a 55 than a 2010 Subaru. But that's another conversation. Al,
or an Alfa Romeo.
Right, exactly. But anyway,
that was my poison.
I appreciate the conversation, sir, and I appreciate your effort.
I appreciate your show.
So thank you very much. You take good care. So thank you very much. Yeah. A lot of truth in what Al has to say with regard to reference information. And again, the changing face of auto repair. And I've got some comments about the changing face of auto repair a little bit later on this hour. Let me get to Fred in Maryland also with an 07 F-150. Some questions. I'm sorry, Paul. Is it Paul? Yeah, there it is, Paul. My glasses went. Let me fix my glasses, Tom. Okay, now I got it. Paul. Thank you.
How are you doing?
Good, sir. I'll talk to you because Tom doesn't have Fred up on the screen yet. How can I help you, Paul?
Hey, I spoke with you about a month or two ago about the 200,000-mile maintenance on my truck.
Okay.
And I'm getting ready to actually do it now, and I'm running into some confusion on the transmission and transfer case fluids between what the book calls for and what's actually available now.
Right.
The book calls for Mercon 5 in the transmission and straight Mercon for the transfer case. And the only thing I've been able to find is like a Dex Merc and another kind of universal ATF.
Well, Motorcraft does make Merc 5. They still make Merc 5. I've got it on the shelf at the shop. We use it all the time. And then transfer case, they're just calling for Mercon. It was always Dex Mercon. It was at one point rated the same. Dex 3 and Mercon, to my knowledge, were the same fluid. And a lot of these trans fluids, the base trans fluid is the same, Paul. It's the little additive package they put in it. to see, you know, here, for example, Chrysler, I know it is Chrysler 7176, but it's Chrysler trans fluid. There's another Chrysler part number for it. The difference between 7176 and DEX, my understanding is 7176 has got a higher anti-foaming agent because Chrysler's worried about aeration and foam in the fluid. So, you know, at that point in a transfer case, trans fluid is trans fluid. It's not going to change that much. In the engine, I would want to be sure that we're putting in the absolute correct thing, so be a little fussier there.
So you're saying for the transfer case, I can put pretty much any DEX Merc blend, but for the transmission, I should get the Mercon 5.
Correct. Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
We do not, no. I've got the regular, you know, AutoZone Advanced and Napa.
Okay. If you get out to, I know O'Reilly will have, the O'Reilly Auto Parts will have the correct fluid. Maybe you could look them up online. But in any event, you know, clearly Motorcraft does make Merc 5. Like I said, I walk past it every day at the shop.
Are there any other manufacturers of the Merc 5?
Pennzoil might. I'm going to say Pennzoil probably does with all honesty, because I happen to have Motorcraft on the shelf, so I never think to look there. But I'm sure you can get out to, if you go Google Pennzoil, whatever it is, PennzoilSynthetics.com, and look up on their website and see what they've got. You know, I do know they make driveline fluids. They make excellent driveline fluids. And to that point, I don't think of Pennzoil. I'm guilty of it myself. I don't think of Pennzoil for, you know, it's oil. No, they make excellent driveline fluids, too. Gear oil, trans fluid, that kind of thing. So by all means, take a look at that. All right, sir?
Yeah, and then I got a couple others. A good brand for the gear oil for the front and rear differentials. I know they're different weights and viscosities, but should I be getting like a Valvoline, a Pennzoil, or?
I would definitely do a Pennzoil. Like I said, their quality is second to none. There's a lot of engineering that goes into their oils. Now for the rear, they're probably going to call, and it also depends on whether or not it is a locker, whether it's a posi or an open axle,
right?
And then does it have a trailer package? If it has a trailer package, I'm trying to remember, is it 75-140 with the trailer package and regular 80-90 weight for just a standard rear diff with no trailer package? So there's a couple of choices there.
The book calls for the 75-140 synthetic.
Yeah, because you have a trailer hitch on yours, right?
Correct, yep.
Yeah. That seems to be the difference. And up front, the front axle is probably standard 80-90 weight gear oil.
What I found, it said it was for a limited slip. Will that still work? I don't have a limited slip in the front.
No, yeah, that'll work. That limited slip is an additive to help if there were clutches in the rear axle with regard to the ability for the clutches to slip and spin.
Okay.
Take both palms of your hand and rotate them against each other. That's basically how a posi clutch works.
Right.
If it has the right amount of lubrication on it, the clutches, eventually your hands would bind and start to drag. The posi additive helps keep them from overheating and binding so that they operate as they slip when they're supposed to, and then they lock together when you're applying power to help drive both wheels, so they work like a posi. But again, I'll tell
that
you what, you could go out to PennzoilSynthetics.com, take a look at their website. There'll be a contact us phone number, and you can call them up, and they can actually make recommendations for specific oils for that vehicle, and you'll be way ahead of the game.
Gotcha.
All
and
right,
my
sir?
Last question pertains to the front universal joints.
Okay.
I got to put them in, but I don't have the capability to do it at home. I need to take the shaft into work, use a press and everything.
Right.
Is it okay to drive it without the front shaft in it, or should I not do that?
No, you shouldn't do that. Yeah, you don't want to do that. Now, depending upon what front axle you have, I'm trying to remember there's certain front axles where you need a special driver tool to install the front seal. This is an F-150 or a 250?
150.
This is a 150, so this is the light-duty axle, so then that shouldn't matter.
Yeah,
Right. Mm-hmm. The 250s, there was a special seal required, or there's a special tool required to put the seal on the front axle when you pull the front axle. If you by chance run into that, and I don't think you will on the 150, keep in mind a trip down to the local Home Depot or hardware store and a piece of plastic PVC pipe to the right diameter, cut the length, will work in a pinch. When you see the seal, you'll understand what I'm saying if you have that set up, and it'll make sense to you, but you can do that as well. All right, sir?
Right, yeah, I'm familiar with what you're referring to there. Yep. So I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
You're very welcome. Paul, you have a good afternoon, sir, and I appreciate you being a listener.
Thank you. You too, sir.
Take care. Very good. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We're back right after this.
Just take your place in the driver's seat.
Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, driving along this hour. Thanks for joining us. Let's get over and talk to Anna Marie in Springville, Indiana, I believe that is, and some problems with an 08 Chevy Impala. Anna Marie, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Well, I bought this car in 2008, and it was a GM program car.
Okay.
It had 32,000 miles on it, and now it's got 89. I can drive it just like I go to Bedford to do my shopping, and that's only about 13, 14 miles one way. And I can come back home, and I always park the car, put it in park, and shut the motor off. And maybe the next day I'll go back out. I need to go somewhere, and it's locked in park.
And you can't get it out.
And I just have the office time getting it back out.
Has it been like that?
Is it in the transmission?
Well, has it been like that since you've had it?
Different times, and they just can't seem to find out why it does that.
Anna Marie, has it been like that since you purchased the car just recently?
Have an answer or not?
Anna Marie, can you hear me?
Huh?
Yeah, can you hear me? Has it been like that since new, or is it something just recently that it started doing that?
I can't hear you.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Anna Marie?
What?
Anna Marie, can you hear me?
Just barely. I'm having phone trouble.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's try that. Has the problem been there since new, or is this something recent?
Oh, no, it's been there ever since I've owned the car.
Okay. Let me ask you, when you park the car, is your garage level?
I don't park it in the garage.
Okay. Is where you park it level?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a level parking spot. Do you set the parking brake?
Well, sometimes I use it.
Okay. So when you set the parking brake, what I'm trying to get to is, I'm wondering if the car is rolling slightly when you put it in park, and then if you apply the parking brake, you've now effectively got the park finger locked inside the transmission. So that's one thought. So, you know, what I'd like for you to try is, when you go to park the car, when the car is in drive, put the parking brake on, then put it in park. That way there's no chance of the park mechanism being jammed inside the transmission. All right? That's number one. Number two, my second thought is there a problem with the shift interlock, meaning that you have to step on the brake pedal to get it to shift out of park? And I'm wondering if there's a problem with either the brake pedal adjustment. I'm wondering if your brake lights work properly. All right? Or if there's a problem with the shift interlock. So what I'd like you to try, and you want to do this with the parking brake on, all right? With the parking brake on, don't turn the key all the way on. Turn it to the position before the dash lights light up. You should be able to shift the car into neutral, then start the car, then put it in drive or reverse. Remember, the parking brake is on. Don't let that confuse you. What I'm trying to prove is that mechanically the linkage is okay, that it's the shift interlock device keeping you from getting it out of park. So just remember that procedure. And, you know, if you want, go back and talk to your mechanic and ask them, how else can you get it out of, and could this be a shift interlock related problem, and see what that does for you. I appreciate the call. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back to wrap it up right after this.
After 6 hours of school, I had enough of the day. I hit the radio dial and turned it up all the way. I got a 10.
Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, rolling around and rolling along and kind of winding it down for this hour at 855-560-9900. So nobody answered my trivia question this hour. Maybe I'll hold it till next hour. There's another hour of Car Doctor coming up after the news on most of these affiliates. In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. number 912831, for what device? And no, I'm not going to tell you. We're going to hold that till next hour. And by the way, I looked up, I did cheat and look up the conversation I had with Al in Maryland with regard to who invented the starter motor. I was right. It was Charles Kettering, but I was wrong. It was 1911. I didn't realize they had done it that early. You know, Cadillac and Charles Kettering was part of AC Delco, Dayton Engineering Laboratories. You know, that's when all that started. But yeah, just some really interesting stuff. Hey, real quick, there's a recall going on. National Highway Traffic has recalled something like from 11 automakers, flange tank covers for gas tanks. Can you see the amount of recalls that are going on in the automotive industry? We'll cover that a little bit later on in the next hour as well. But holy cow, everything's getting recalled. Nothing's made right. That's why they need Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor reminding you good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.